another episode of Scuttlebutt, the official podcast of the National Museum of the Surface Navy in affiliation with the Surface Navy Association's Battleship Iowa chapter. We are here in the Associated Foundation's Training Center aboard Battleship Iowa, and we have another group of returning crew with us today. So the first thing we'll do is go around the room and do introductions. I'm going to start on my left over here.
Oh, with me?
Yeah, with you.
Oh, okay. My name's Robert Lemon, or Bobby, as they called me on the ship. I was a personnelman, PN3, made PN2 on here. I was part of the pre-com crew for the recommissioning in the 80s, and was stationed on board here until 85. I transferred away in 85. So,
cool.
And this is the first time I've been back in, well, since 85.
Wow. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
All right, you're up next.
My name is Marty Palmier. Electrician's mate. I got here as a third class. Left as first class surface warfare specialist.
We decided to live dangerously and bring Marty in again.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do.
I'm a repeat performer.
Repeat offender.
Yeah.
And I'm Marianne Fengler. I'm usually the producer in here. And to my right, we've got...
Mike Etcher, I don't know, what do you call myself? Head cook, chief bottle washer, all that kind of stuff, chief engineer, chief operating officer, and so forth. So I've been on board for 11 years now.
Aww.
11 years.
Wow, 11 years. Scott Williamson came on board as a PNSN, PNSN.
What's a PNSN?
Personnelman.
Oh.
It kind of was.
Peon.
It felt like one for a little while anyway. Came on board in 84, was here till 86, and glad to be back. I came back a few years ago for the reunion, and it's good to be back.
Good.
Y'all have done a lot of work. It's looking really good here.
That's cool. Yes, I'm going to go.
Yeah, go.
So it's fun to have, you guys are plank owners. I think all three of you are.
Yes, sir.
So for those who don't know, a plank owner is that commissioning crew, the crew that is there the day of commissioning. My father was a battleship sailor. He missed being a plank owner on the USS Massachusetts by like 3 or 4 days or something like that. Just missed it. But he was there for the entire war. So back at the 50th reunion in 95, before I lost him, they kind of gave him an honorary plank owner thing. But that's cool. You know,
awesome.
Pretty neat stuff. So first days on a ship are kind of interesting, I think, for all of us. I didn't have a military background. I was in the merch marine. I held a license in. And it's kind of typical for us, and probably not too atypical for you. You just fly your way or make your way to a new vessel, and you've never been a boarder. In many cases, you've never served aboard a vessel of that type at all. You don't even know where to go, necessarily. And my first effort was down in Mobile, Alabama. And it was a 200-foot search and survey vessel run by a big corporation called Science Applications International Corp. And literally went down there, was introduced to the crew. And a day later, I was underway standing a watch, you know. And so you learn things quickly, and you have to depend on all of your wits. But you're also kind of stepping into a new schoolyard. You know, in my case, it was smaller. We had 25 or 30 people on the vessel. And you guys, you walk aboard a ship with 1,500, and this is 400,000 square feet and 19 decks. So
it's a maze.
What the heck was that like for all of you? I mean, Marty, you got something?
It's a big maze.
Yeah.
I remember first time I set foot on board, December 29th, 1983. We were in the yards at Pascagoula, all kind of hoses. You really couldn't, you had a hard time finding your way because everything was all tore apart and it was going to be completely different when it was all completed. Then you've learned your way to your work center, you learned your way to your berthing compartment, you learned your way to the chow hall, and the most important one, you learn your way to the dispersing office to get your pay.
Which is on this deck about 400 feet that way. Yep. What about you, Bob?
Excuse me. It's kind of course, the Iowa was not my first ship, so it didn't quite have that shock value that my first Navy ship did, but... I came down here as well, or came down when they were in Pascagoula, still in the yards and still under a lot of construction. We were living in a barracks, you know, off the ship. So most of us just, you know, at that time, we would come on board in the morning and go straight to our workspace and go to work. And so didn't really get to see a lot of the ship initially when we first got here. But of course, I had actually applied to be part of the pre-com crew on my previous ship. So, you know, I was just excited that I was going to a battleship, so it was exciting to see the ship, even as tore up in the shape that she was in, you know, in Pascagoula, and to watch her come together after that, and to be part of some of the things that happened as far as trying to modernize some things. Of course, they still had the old numbering system, compartment numbering system all over the place. Marty and I were talking last night about they had formed what they called a Tiger Team, which is just getting a bunch of people from every division and every department to work on one thing. And we had a Tiger Team going through every single compartment on this ship and renumbering fittings, re-stenciling compartments, and I don't know if there's one around here, but you have what's called a
there's the old one.
Well, there's the old one there. But you also have a piece of paper that's a compartment checkoff list.
Right.
And has every single damage control fitting in that space, every valve, everything else. And we had to go through and redo every one of those compartment checkoff lists.
That took about 2 days, right?
Yeah, one or two. In fact, we were talking this morning, and I told Marty, I said, I remember one time as part of that exercise, I remember being somewhere way, 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 way down, and there was seawater underneath my feet. And Marty said, yeah, you were probably down in the sea chest, and that sounds familiar. I think that may have been where I've been sent, had been sent to go get some more compartment checkoff list stuff figured out. But it was very exciting. It was exciting.
Things like that are cool.
Main seawater valve, one each. Yeah.
So, Scott, what about you? You had your first experience here, too. I mean, you stepped aboard.
Well, this was my first and only command. So I kind of fell into the category of your dad, is that I'd been attached to the ship, and they pulled my papers and were getting ready to send me out, and they said, well, they're commissioning his ship in 3 days. We're just going to send you to Norfolk, and you can meet it in Norfolk.
Oh.
So as far as, you know, my workmates were concerned, you know, they've always told me I was a plank owner, and that, you know, I was part of the original crew and went on the shakedown cruise and did all that. So I never got a plank, but I consider myself a plank owner. But I came here from Meridian, Mississippi, at PNA school, which was you know, an eye-opener, because I joined the Navy thinking that, you know, PM was going to be a skate job. You know, sit behind a desk and drink coffee and eat donuts and, you know, admin, hell, we'll be running things, you know. Nah. You know, everybody else got off of work in the afternoon. We worked till taps every night, you know. There was paperwork to send off for the paperwork that we needed to do. And, it was a military thing, but I didn't really know anything about a battleship, but I did. I had an uncle that worked at Dahlgren's Naval Weapons Base, and I had, as a kid, had seen the barrels there and had seen a couple of them tested, I think, and I knew about that, but I hadn't put the two together. And the master chief of the command came actually, what they did, I think it was the top five of us in the class they came to and brought us a dream sheet where you could kind of pick out, you know, where you wanted to go. And I didn't really know where I wanted to go because, you know, I had military in my family and they were all Navy, but they were all had been in foreign countries. And they were, you know, I had an uncle that was, he was the CO of the base down in San Diego, and my aunt hated San Diego for some reason. This is back in the 50s, so he built her a house for like $14,000 up in San Francisco. And, you know, about 10 years ago, she finally died, and the kids, I think they sold that thing for like well over $1.5 million, something like it's crazy. But anyway, I told the master chief, I said, man, I have no idea where I need to go. I says, you've been in the Navy a long time. I says, you tell me where I need to go. You fill out my dream sheet. Sorry. So he did, and a couple weeks later, my orders came in. It was to Iowa, and he brought them to me, and cried like a little baby when he gave them to me. He said, man, I'd do anything to have those. And I was like, man, you can have them. You know, he's like, no, you don't understand. He said, these are career making orders right here. He said, you go to the aisle and keep your nose clean and do what you're supposed to do. And he says, you'll be able to go anywhere and do anything you want in there.
Yeah, I heard that a lot from a lot of the early guys, too. Later on, you had a different problem with gunner's mates, but that's a different story, too. But you mentioned something that caught my ear, though, my attention, was the shakedown cruises. And you and I have a funny story. So real quickly, Marty, look at the look on his face. You and I talked on the phone a couple times. We were up in Richmond getting the ship ready to bring to L.A. to open her up as a museum. And I went and picked you up at the SFO, I guess, or yeah. The name of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you hopped in the truck, and I'll never forget this because you ran up the brow like, you know, Jim Belushi or whatever. They're actually the Belushi brothers could all do that. But we had a great time. But I remember at the time I threw away what I thought was an old sailboat helm or steering wheel, and it was in the trash. And I think you salvaged it, or you told somebody about it. That was the actual wheel you guys used. In your the sea trials, wasn't it?
Yeah, because our original brass and rosewood helm grew legs and walked.
So just so everybody knows, the Navy History and Heritage Command, the curator of the Navy, and this also applies to the Maritime Administration, they have a list of equipment that they will come and remove from a vessel that's being decommissioned. And among that are the helms, the trick wheels, which are small helms.
Back they're gone.
Yeah, there, and we know for a fact that there are 5 wheels in storage, and this is the comical part to us. It literally is kind of like the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where the Ark of the Covenant is somewhere deep in this huge warehouse. I think it's in Maryland now, but those wheels are, or at least 5 of them are there, so I assume it's 4 trick wheels and 1 of the helms. So there's a missing helm, we think. But it's just comical. When you look, and please come down to the ship and see this, it looks like a sailboat stainless steel helm.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, and I said, sure enough, I went up there and fit it on the shaft, and it was perfect. But I literally had thrown it away, thinking it was a piece of junk. So now it's just part of our history here, you know. And we'll get the wheel at some point. But the Navy owns those components. We would have to ask for them to loan it to us. So it'll happen.
That wheel got a hell of a workout on here.
I bet. What was the shakedown like?
Yeah, what was that like?
I showed up here at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, you know, and I got off here on the pier and started walking, and I walked and I walked and I walked, and the more I walked, the bigger this damn thing got, you know. And I was, by the time I got up to the top of the brow, I was kind of a little intimidated because, you know, you really couldn't see all that well, and man, this sucker's huge. And they brought me in around the personnel office, and of course by that time the red lights were on in the passageways, and that was my first experience, you know, and I was lost, you know. Yeah, I did find my way from to my bunk and to the bathroom and to the mess deck, because they were all in a straight row on the same deck. And I think I probably had to have somebody help me up to the PN office the next day. But the shakedown cruise was That was pretty cool. It was really intense because we got to, you know, basically try out all the different things on board, you know, that we didn't really shoot any Tomahawk cruise missiles or anything like that, but we checked out all the different, you know, engineering things, and I had a good time. I mean, it takes a while to really figure out where you are on here, you know. Once you're, you know, in a department or a division, you know, you kind of hang in that area of the ship mostly. And, you know, it was amazing to me when we came back for the reunion last time, we were walking around the ship, how many guys had never seen so many parts of the ship. And, you know, it didn't dawn on me as a personnelman. The peons down at the bottom, which I was one of, we ran message traffic to the captain. You know, and it didn't matter where he was on the ship. You better be able to find your way there, you know, because you go to Radio Central and pick up, you know, message traffic, and wherever he was, you carried it to him. So, you know, it took me a minute, but it didn't take long to, you know, thank God Bobby got all those things right.
You know, got those bullseyes. We still use them, and we teach them to our crew even today. Bob, what about you?
You know, the thing I remember the most about the shakedown cruise, there were a lot of us on board that hadn't been at sea for a while because we had been in Pascagoula, you know, bringing the ship back to life. We're in Norfolk getting a lot of all the paperwork and all that stuff done. And we went to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And I don't know if I mentioned this to Scott yesterday. I don't know if I did to Marty, but the thing I remember most about the Shakedown cruise is that in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, about two-thirds of the crew came down with a norovirus. Remember that? We were sick as, I mean, it was coming out both ends.
Oh, wow. We called it the creeping crud.
But yeah. But so many of us had not been to Guantanamo Bay in such a long time that we just, you know, weren't used to all that. And I guess our immune systems. But, I mean, I don't remember. I went to sick bay, and I remember they were telling me that, I mean, it was like almost half the crew. Or more, we're down
remember
hot.
By the time we got down there, it was really hot.
Yeah, we were pretty.
And we were going to general quarters two or three times a day, doing the fire, and they had turned all the ventilation off, and half the guys were sick. And man, yeah, that was real fun.
Yeah, but it started as soon as we left Pascagoula. I mean, they didn't waste any time. We did a full ammo lot between Pascagoula and Norfolk. Wow. We also had half our stores down reefers. And dry goods loaded out already by the time we hit Norfolk. They did it all underway on the way up.
And how long was this cruise?
30?
No, we...
Four, shakedown?
How many days did it take us to get from Pascagoula? About a week.
Yeah, five or six days. Yeah. I mean, I've gone from Mobile up around the other side of the Fort Pierce.
We were in Norfolk for probably about a month, maybe not, and then back out to Cuba.
Yeah, that's where the norovirus happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Shakedown crew, now that you mention that, yeah, I mean, seeing those guns fired the first time.
Yeah.
And we learned some lessons. We learned that if you did not dog all of the hatches completely down, if you left two or three, if you just, like, did the lazy thing and put a couple of dogs down, it would twist the hatch when they fired the guns.
And you also learned for the first time firing the guns, you do not sit under the supply ventilation duct because everything that has accumulated in that ventilation duct for the past 25 years comes roaring out to you in a real quick hurry.
Yeah.
And you wind up wearing little dirty birdie feet, feathers, dirt, pigeon crap, all kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
It just comes blowing out of the ventilation duct.
Yeah, was it you that told me you had to cover up your food in the mess deck when they shot guns?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh,
I mean, every time those things went off, everything in here shook. It falling out of the overhead.
Light bulbs would burst in the...
Light bulbs would... I mean, they were constantly... Every time they would shoot the guns, they'd blow out. You know what I mean? They had us... And I don't know this. You probably might know this better than me, but I know that they had somebody... Every time they fired the guns was... part of their duty was to order new light bulbs.
That was the biggest part of my first thing. I ran a light shop on the mess decks. I was constantly ordering light bulbs.
Oh, my God.
Constantly. It was a never-ending thing. After every gun shoot, I had a run come down here. EM2, I need a box of light bulbs. EM2, can I have two boxes of light bulbs? And then at the time, it was like what they were doing, they were hoarding them. So we started doing a one-for-one turn-in. You bring me two bulbs, I'll give you two bulbs.
Wow.
We couldn't keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, plus we're using archaic Snap 2 computers, you know, your black screen and green printing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dark ages.
This stuff predates. In fact, you still had the typewriter desks, you know, the ones with the drop-down.
Like manual typewriters?
Yeah, when we were using those.
Well, we actually had, I mean, we were modern enough, we had electric typewriters. We had the old IBM Selectric 2s or 3s. Like up in Sue's office up there, not her office, but the next one, that old admin office, that typewriter, that desk up there, you know, with the we spent many an hour on one of those desks.
That's where we lived. Yeah. And you change a type out, you know, different type things in the service record or whatever you were typing would call for different type, and they had little balls, the type balls that you would switch out on it, you know. And then we also shortly after we got underway, that may have been actually already in place. We were using the Xerox 860 word processors with the floppy disk, which...
Yeah, the big 10, 12-inch floppy disk.
When they were actually floppy.
Yeah.
And they were floppy.
Yeah.
Who was it that came up with the idea to wrap cheesecloth around the the supply.
I don't know.
Yeah, they started putting double cheesecloth on it, so all that crap.
They did that in the decom, too, for all the sinks and everything, too.
Yeah. You
know, that's keep what they it did. All from falling.
Yeah.
This is funny. You know, there's so much continuity, too. Of course, my dad talked about the guns shaking. He said he used to have a station on top of turret 2 on his ship, and he said when they went off, if you were sitting down, it shook your guts out. If you're standing up, it would knock you over. You know, and he just literally had similar experiences. And just kind of for us, when we first got the ship, I would say one out of every five or six light bulbs actually worked because it all burned out. You know, T12s, and we were constantly swapping out light bulbs. And then we found out, you guys are going to crack up, through an LA Department of Water and Power program, we were able to replace, and I remember this number pretty specifically, 10,480 some odd light bulbs aboard the ship with LEDs. There's wow. a lot of light bulbs. This ship is bigger than most people think. You know, it's a lot more than what you would just guess.
Yeah,
I mean, there's 1,000 phones in the ship. 1,000 phones.
You see it at the dock, it's big enough, but then you start getting below the water or, you know, just inside, and there's so much in each compartment.
Yeah.
It's a little, well, more than a little mind-blowing.
When you go down the ladder towards the third deck, as you're standing on the third deck by about 2.5-3 feet above the deck, that's the water line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will break right there and save the rest of this conversation for a second podcast. As usual, thank you so much for listening to Scuttlebutt. We will see you next time. And if you have any feedback, comments, questions, topics you'd like us to discuss, please send them to podcast@labattleship.com. That is podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at labattleship.com. Thanks, and we'll catch you next time.